Shalom. Welcome to the Jewish Task Force, JTF. My name is Chaim Ben Pesach. This program is dedicated to elevating the souls of Simcha Chasdai, Pesach Ben Dov, Meir Ben Yecheskel, and Yosef Ben Meir. Before we get to our many questions from our great JTFers, I want to speak about the knockout assaults on whites in general and Jews in particular, because I think it's a very important issue. It really demonstrates just how much deterioration we've had in Western culture and in Western society. We have a breakdown in civil order that is beginning to take place because evil, immoral beasts in the news media, in politics, in Hollywood, are creating a situation in which evil people, through sheer brute force and violence, take control of the streets again. It's a very dangerous situation. Very dangerous. But first of all, let's speak about some of the issues involved here and why this is so significant. We did two videos on this subject this week. I think they're both important videos, and I urge you to promote those videos everywhere you can, because those videos tell a truth, a politically incorrect truth that no one else will tell. And one of the issues we spoke about is how when Barack Hussein Obama was elected to the presidency and when he was running for the presidency, everybody said that if he gets elected, that this is going to lead to a new era of racial brotherhood and harmony, and he's going to heal the wounds and bring us all together. And we warned at the time that that would not happen, that if anything, Obama's election will only exacerbate the racial divide and create more racial polarization and more racial violence and more racial confrontation than ever before. Because Obama getting elected has encouraged these evil people to believe that they control the country now. Their bro is in the White House. They think they control the country now. And so they have less fear. They don't fear white people, white police, white authority. They don't fear that anymore. And in many big cities, there are no white police. I mean, the majority of new police being hired in most major cities are not white. But in any event, Obama's election is a signal, along with many other signals, that white people are weak and are easy targets. And Jews are weak, and Jews are an easy target. This is the message they're getting from all of the movies in Hollywood that show blacks to be superior and whites are always inferior. Blacks are always the hero and the whites are always the wimps. Blacks are always the geniuses and they always come out successfully and they always win every fight. And the white is always the loser and always the disaster and always the failure. That's the message of all the Hollywood movies. That's the message of all the programs on television. Even when a black is a criminal in a television program, even if they have a program where they show a black committing a crime, the black person is always a wonderful person and the crime is always in some way justified. White society and white people are always the bad guys and blacks are always the good guys. In every Hollywood movie, in every television show, on every commercial on television. The message of Hollywood, the news media, and the major corporations is a simple message. Black people are wonderful and white people stink and white people are terrible. That's the message. And so these black gangs and mobs who see all of this, who witness all of this, and who are filled with hatred and envy, anyway, they're still, despite the message that they're superior and the whites are inferior, they still feel this envy because deep down they still know that their IQs are lower, that they're less successful in life, that their parents weren't married. In many cases, they don't even know who their father is, that they come from abusive homes and abusive communities and neighborhoods. So deep down, they know that there's a little bit of a problem. There's a disconnect between what they're watching in the movies and on television and reality that they see in their day-to-day lives. So they still feel this envy toward white people. And they still feel this deep-seated hatred because day and night they're taught you were slaves and there was racism and discrimination and white people are terrible. This is what they're taught day and night. Constantly, they're being preached to with racist incitement and hate-mongering messages day and night. They get it from the rap so-called music, which is really just noise, which is just jungle noise. They get the hatred from the rap so-called music. They get the hatred from the movies, from the television shows, from their leaders. Non-stop hatred. This is what they're hearing day and night. And they're hearing that the people they hate are weaklings and an easy target. And you can just go up to them and punch them in the face, and it's a cool thing to do. This is the message that's being given out to these beasts. Let's understand something here. And it's something that we should have understood, that people should have understood when they voted for that animal Barack Hussein Obama to make him president. When you do something good for evil people, they don't view acts of kindness as an act of kindness. They view every act of kindness as an act of weakness. Every concession you make to them, they view as an act of weakness. It only encourages them to be more violent and more hateful and more aggressive against you. The only language evil people understand is strength and fear. When white people acted with strength against these criminals many years ago, they were afraid. They were put in their place. And they understood the consequences of their behavior. When they're not put in their place, and they're not shown that your evil, hideous, bestial desire to commit acts of violence is not going to be tolerated, when they're not shown that, they're going to go out and commit worse and worse acts of violence and bolder attacks. And so cities are going to become unlivable, and it's going to be impossible to walk down the streets. And Jews especially are going to become prominent victims of this. They're going to especially be attacked, as we saw recently in New York City, in Brooklyn. In Brooklyn, about a dozen Jews were attacked, and about, I think, 12 or 13 of the past attacks, 12 or 13 in a row, were all Jews, were all people who were clearly, visibly Jewish. And Jewish weakness and the Jewish desire to appease and the Jewish desire to get down on your hands and knees and kiss the behind of your enemies, this is what it leads to. This is something the Jews have not learned after 2,000 years. They never learn. They never learn. They never learn that the enemy doesn't understand when you get on your hands and knees and act like a weakling. That's what leads to Auschwitz. That's what leads to Holocaust and pogroms and inquisitions. Only when Jews are strong and stand up for themselves and defend themselves, that is what gives Jews not only self-respect, but respect from others. If you have no self-respect, no one else will respect you either. You can't ask others to respect you if you have no self-respect. And most white people today and most Jews are self-hating. Whites that run around imitating blacks or trying to suck up to blacks are self-hating white people. They have no self-respect. And so they don't receive respect from anyone else, and they don't deserve any respect from anyone else. Now, I want to say that if people who voted for Obama are being attacked, I couldn't care less. You deserve it. You deserve it. You deserve everything you get if you voted for Obama. I don't give a damn about you if you voted for Obama. You didn't care about what he's going to do to the country. You didn't care about Israel. You didn't care about his Muslim past. You didn't care about any of that. You voted for this beast. Good. It serves you right. But unfortunately, a lot of the victims here are people who didn't vote for Obama. A lot of the victims are Orthodox Jews, and we know that the Orthodox Jews, 90% of the Orthodox Jewish vote was against Obama. 90% of the Orthodox Jews voted Republican in the past two presidential elections. And they, because they're visibly, the Orthodox Jews are visibly Jewish, they are the most prominent victims of these attacks here. And so they're being unfairly punished because of the evil behavior of their assimilated fellow Jews, the assimilated self-hating fellow Jews, who decided that they want to be noble. They think it's noble to vote for a black Muslim Jew hater. They think there's something noble about that. Or they would say, as they would say, for the first African-American president. He's a Muslim, vicious, Jew-hating, white-hating piece of subhuman garbage. He's a piece of garbage. His ugly wife is a piece of garbage. His supporters are garbage. Now, I know that this isn't the message you hear from any other Jewish organizations. And I know this is a message that many will not, many will say, oh, how can you speak like this? This is terrible. Come on. These people are subhuman excrement. And it's about time it be told. The truth be told. And if America were a sane country and a normal country like it used to be, 50 years ago or 60 years ago, anyone trying to do this would be shot to death on the spot. Some beast going up and trying to hit a 78-year-old woman. You had in Manhattan a 78-year-old woman was punched and knocked to the ground. In Brooklyn, a 72-year-old woman was punched and knocked to the ground. In Brooklyn, a 12-year-old kid was punched and knocked to the ground. Two people have already been killed. Two people have died already from these attacks. If this was a normal country, automatically, when someone decides to commit these potentially lethal attacks, people would defend themselves. They pull out a firearm and shoot these beasts to death, which is what they deserve. They deserve to be shot to death. Any beast that wants to victimize innocent people solely because of the color of their skin or solely because they're Jewish, they deserve to be shot. People have a right to defend themselves. People have a right to walk peacefully down the street without being physically attacked, assaulted, and having their lives endangered. And if this were a normal country, that's what people would do. But we've already seen that when someone defends themselves, then the news media, that didn't give a damn about all these attacks, suddenly rises up and starts attacking the person who defended himself or herself. When will we learn? When will we learn? When will there finally be the necessary backlash against these evil people? Because that's the only hope for saving America. And in Israel, it's the only hope for saving Israel, that there be a right-wing backlash. And when will Jews learn? The Jews in Crown Heights and in Borough Park and all these other religious communities in Brooklyn. When are they going to learn? You don't belong in Brooklyn. Hashem is telling you, get the hell out of the Galut, get the hell out of the exile. You belong in Eretz Yisrael. You belong in the land of Israel. You think God gave us a Jewish homeland and liberated the land of Israel with all these miracles so that you can live in Brooklyn? What a disgrace. God is trying to push you out of Brooklyn and push you out of the exile. Tragically, though, the only ones telling the truth. We're the only ones telling the truth, to Jews, at least. Believe me, there is no other Jewish organization or Jewish voice that speaks like this, like we do in JTF. No one. There is I'm speaking about the United States. In England, we have a JDL in England, which is an excellent organization. The JDL in England is a very good organization. And of course, we have our movement in Israel, our Hebrew movement in Israel, and you have good Jews in the hillside, in the hilltop communities in Judea and Samaria. You have some good Jews in Eretz Yisrael as well. But in the United States, we're the only Jewish organization that speaks like this. The only ones. We're the only ones that did videos showing that Obama's a Muslim and a Jew hater and warned you for all these years. We're the only ones that did this. The only ones. In the Jewish community in America, we're the only voice of truth on these issues. The only voice of truth. How pathetic. 5 million or 5.5 million American Jews, most of whom were assimilated, intermarried, and wouldn't know a Jewish concept if they fell over it. If they tripped over it, they wouldn't know a Jewish concept. And out of all this, with all their wealth and all the influence and everything else they have, JTF is the only group that tells the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth to Jews in America. Reality. It's the reality. Just as on the issues like Iran and on issues like getting the Arabs out of Israel and all these other issues, we're the only group that tells the truth to the Jews in Israel as well. Here in the United States. Again, I want to say that in England we have the JDL in England is a good organization, and we have, you have some good Jews in Israel. You have some good Jews in Israel in the hilltop communities, but they don't have organizations. They don't have official movements. If you understand how dangerous this is and what this can lead to, This can lead to pogroms. This can lead to horrific situations. This can lead to a complete breakdown in order. And the Jews will be the first target. White people in general are going to be a target, as they are. But the first target, the very first target, will be the Jews. If you understand how dangerous this is, then, you know, we are the group that is telling the truth and trying to wake people up. If we wake enough people up, if we had enough resources and we could wake enough people up, then we would do something that we would do what has to be done to deal with this situation. People who can acquire legal firearms should. People have to learn how to defend themselves. They have to learn street fighting, and they have to learn boxing, and they have to learn karate, and they have to learn martial arts, and other types of martial arts. Very important. People should learn how to use their hands and their feet to fight, and people should be armed. And we should have legal defense teams and lawyers ready to defend someone who defends themselves. If we were a mass movement, that's what we would encourage. We would encourage the righteous Gentiles to do that. The Jews, we would also encourage the Jews to do that, but we would also have another message for the Jews. Get out of here. Go to Israel. You shouldn't be here. How unfortunate that we don't have the budget to become a mass movement right now. How unfortunate. You see the price everybody's paying. Everybody's paying a price because of that. America's paying a price. Israel's paying a price. Because, you know, the Jews are supposed to be a light unto the nations. That would be a light unto the nations if the Jews were standing up against these black racist beasts who are attacking innocent people walking down the street. And the Jews awakened enough people to fight back and to finally put an end to this. That would make the Jews a light unto the nations. That would be a true light unto the nations. Instead, all the self-hating left-wing Jewish organizations and all the Jewish wimps in the Anti-Defamation League and the American Jewish Congress, the American Jewish Committee, Hadassah, UJA Federation, and all these other organizations, they're not a light unto the nations, they're a blight unto the nations, the Simon Wiesenthal Center. They're a blight unto the nations. JTF wants us to be a light unto the nations and a holy nation, a nation of priests. JTF wants the Jews and the righteous Gentiles to stand up for righteousness and justice and fight for truth. JTF wants to encourage righteous people to be warriors against evil and injustice. If we were a mass movement, you better believe we would be encouraging that. Anyway, once again, it's lonely out here in terms of the fact that you go to other Jewish forums. Go to other Jewish forums. Go to other Jewish organizations or websites. Let's see if you hear the message you've just heard now from anyone else. I challenge you. Bring this up and dare to say anything politically correct. You'll be banned in 2 seconds. You, they'll ban. If some black anti-Semite comes on there and starts intimidating everybody, they'll kiss that black anti-Semite's tuchus. But you they'll ban. That's the mentality. And that's why whites in general and Jews in particular are being brutally attacked. And in 2 cases, 2 people were actually murdered already. That's why this is happening. It will only get worse unless people wake up, unless we finally wake up. It will only get worse. We have to have self-defense. We have to have legal defense for those people who do defend themselves physically and with firearms. We have to have political leaders who believe in America and who believe in moral values and biblical values, like Ted Cruz and like our movement in Israel. Those are some of the things we have to have if we want this to be a livable world and a better world. Anyway, that's a commentary that I wanted to give you. I think I went a little bit further here than I've gone on the videos because, you know, on the videos, I always go as far as I think we can go on YouTube because YouTube, as you know, is anti-white and anti-Semitic. Facebook is anti-white and anti-Semitic, so I have to limit what I say. I have to watch what I say because otherwise our videos and every and our message won't get out at all. I want us to at least get our message out to a certain extent, and our videos do put out a message that is able to get through and is able to get onto YouTube and stay on YouTube. We do have a message that has been doing that. We have been able to do that and still get a lot of the points in. I mean, we've got most of our ideology and most of our points are in those are getting in those videos, thank God. But we need the help of all JTFers, because I know that you understand how important this message is. You understand why it's so important that people stand up and tell the truth. You understand why that's important. When everyone else is lying, when everyone else is deceiving, when everyone else is appeasing, when everyone else is kissing the behinds of the most evil people on the face of the earth, whether it's black racists in America or Arab Muslim Nazis in the land of Israel, you, as JTFers, you understand why it's so important that finally we have someone that tells that could tell the truth, and if we could do it on a massive scale, oh, what a wonderful world this could be. And so, there are ways you could help us, because I know that our fellow JTFers are idealists. I know you care. I know you love your fellow human beings, and you at least the righteous human beings, and you don't want good and innocent people to get hurt. And so there are ways that you can help right now. There are things you can do. One of them is when we put up our English and Hebrew videos. Help us promote those English and Hebrew videos on YouTube and on Facebook. The more you help us in the search engines and the more you help us promote the videos, the more people are exposed to the truth, the more people we can hopefully wake up. And how do you do that? You do that, you can like and comment, favorite, share and mirror the videos. Those are all different methods of promoting the videos on both YouTube and on Facebook. And it's very important that that be done. The Hebrew and the English videos, because you even if you don't speak Hebrew, help us with the Hebrew videos too. You want Israeli Jews to get the truth also. Of course you do. So even if you don't speak Hebrew, go to the video and at least help us promote the video on Facebook's on the Facebook and YouTube search engines by doing the things that we urge you to do. And also, you can help us on our forums and our Facebook pages, of course, with good threads and posts so that people will want to become active. And most of all, you know what our downfall is. It's the same downfall that Rabbi Kahana unfortunately experienced, and it's the same downfall that we had with Jabotinsky before the Holocaust, where he didn't have enough funds to make the difference and to save the Jews of Europe before the Holocaust. If he had had enough funds, we could have prevented the Holocaust. It's the down. This is the downfall that that right-wing Jews have faced throughout recent history. We just don't have the budget that's necessary to reach enough people with our message of truth. That's our problem. That's our problem. And so let's at least do the best we can. We're required to do the best we can with what we have and to put our best effort in there. And hopefully Hashem will help us get maximum results. But we must try the best we can and reach as many people as we can, as quickly as we can. That's our obligation. And so I thank the great JTFers who generously send us checks and money orders and cash donations to our post office box. It makes a big difference. Every contribution really makes a big difference. God bless you and God bless your families. And if other people prefer, instead of sending it through the regular mail to the P.O. box, if other people prefer doing it online with their credit cards, we, of course, have the donate buttons on our main pages. Oh, how I wish what you heard in this past message, how I wish this message would reach every Jew in Israel and every good American, every decent American. What a different world this would be if that happened. And someday, I may not live to see that day, but someday that's going to happen. Someday you're going to have good, righteous people with this message. They're going to reach people with this message. That's going to happen someday. In the meantime, we've got to carry the torch and reach as many people as we can and fight as hard as we can so that we can be the link to the time. We'll be like the bridge to the time when we finally reach a massive audience, when somehow this movement gets the break that it needs to reach a massive audience, which again, it may happen in a year, it may happen in 10 years, it may happen in 20 years or 30 years, I don't know. But eventually it will happen. How do I know? Because the prophets in the Bible and Chazal, the rabbinic sages, all tell us that most of the Jews are going to return to Judaism and are going to repent of the evil they've done and are going to become good people, even though they were very evil. It's going to be a very evil generation and they're going to come back. So I know it's going to happen for the Jewish people and many righteous, and they're going to be the righteous Gentiles throughout the world. Those who are righteous are going to be inspired by that, and they're also going to do the right thing when that happens. But until that happens, with our limited resources, we got to do the best we can. And at least with us, you know, we're going to do everything we can, the very best we can. Okay, let's start now with our questions from our great JTFers. And we start out with the great Wandering Samurai 81, who writes, and I quote, "Why hasn't the 90-year-old fossil known as Henry Kiss-Assinger croaked?" Unquote. Very good question. The same thing with the 90-year-old fossil known as Shimon Peres and many of these other evil people. There's a rule. In an evil generation, evil people live long lives. A lot of these evil people live on and live very long lives. They live to ripe old ages. That's part of the punishment when you have an evil generation. If it was a righteous generation, the evil would die young, and the righteous would live on to a very ripe old age. But in an evil generation, evil people, unfortunately, like Henry Kissinger, like Shimon Peres, and like many of these other beasts who seem to live on and on and on and do endless damage, they continue to live. It's part of the punishment. Anyway, thank you, Wandering Samurai. And now we go to our good friend Joe Gutfeld, who writes, and I quote, "Shalom Chaim, what do you think of the comments made by Martin Bashir towards Sarah Palin? He's the one who took down Michael Jackson," unquote. Well, he did do an interview. He did interviews with Michael Jackson, that's true, about 10 years ago. And Michael Jackson thought that they would be Uri Geller, by the way, the self-hating Israeli Jew who's friends with Michael Jackson. Uri Geller arranged the interview. He thought that it would be a puff job. But instead, Martin Bashir deliberately went into the pedophilia and went into all the other terrible things Michael Jackson was doing, because Martin Bashir wanted to publicize, he wanted to promote himself. It wasn't because Martin Bashir has any morals, he doesn't. By the way, Martin Bashir is a Pakistani who lives in England, but he's actually a Pakistani, he's of Pakistani descent. Martin Bashir decided to take on Michael Jackson because, you know, he wanted to make a name for himself, and that's a good way to make a name for yourself. But he's completely immoral. He's an extreme leftist, filled with hatred. He's a racist and an anti-Semite. And he has a show, of course, on MSNBC. Those are the things, to be a racist, an anti-Semite, an extreme leftist, a hate-mongering, vicious, evil piece of garbage. Those are the things you have to have on your resume if you want a show on MSNBC or on any of the major networks. And so he said horrible things about Sarah Palin, terrible things, and was forced to apologize. But he's not being fired. He's not being removed from his position. Another MSNBC host, Alec Baldwin, who's also a famous actor, made some comment against gays, and he was immediately fired. He made some comment, not on camera, he made a comment against gays. And he was immediately fired because he dared to say something against gays. But Martin Bashir said the most vicious, horrible things about Sarah Palin. The worst possible things, and nothing's happening to him. That's MSNBC. Thank you, Joe. And now we go to the great Lewinsky Stinks, Dr. Brennan Rocks, who writes, and I quote, "Now that Iran is protected by international treaty, will Obama strike Israel if Israel hits the nuke facilities? Have you considered this danger?" Unquote. No, I don't think that's going to happen. I think if Israel hits the nuclear facilities, I don't think that Obama would dare to. He's not going to start a war with Israel. It's not that he doesn't want to. I mean, he is a Muslim Jew hater. He would love to start a war with Israel. But he knows that the United States public opinion is not ready for something like that, to attack Israel, which is America's most loyal ally. The United States public opinion, that the United States public opinion would not tolerate right now. I'm not saying in the future it won't happen. With Gog and Magog and that whole situation, America may turn on Israel militarily in the future. But right now, no, I don't think that would happen. I'm convinced it wouldn't happen. I think Israel can still destroy Iran's nuclear facilities and should still destroy Iran's nuclear facilities. They should have done it years ago. Every day that passes, it becomes more and more difficult. You see how difficult this becomes. Look at this. You wouldn't have had this situation. We wouldn't be in this mess if Netanyahu had done what we suggested last year during the peak of the presidential election, when Obama desperately needed every vote he could get. That was the perfect time for Israel to strike, and Netanyahu, the coward, didn't do it. Now if he strikes, of course, the reaction will be much stronger because they do have this disgusting so-called agreement. But when there's a threat of a nuclear holocaust, it doesn't matter. Israel should still strike because the threat is so severe. Unfortunately, I don't believe Israel will do what has to be done. We've seen their behavior. We've seen the behavior of these cowardly, pathetic, horrific leaders in Israel, and this is how we've gotten to this point. Thank you, Lewinsky Stinks. And now we go to our good friend Binyamin Yisrael, who writes, and I quote, "Someone told me that JFK would be a Tea Party person by today's standards. It seems leftists hijack his legacy just like with Lincoln. Someone wrote a book called Kennedy Conservative. JFK was the first president to establish the special relationship with Israel," unquote. What special relationship? Binyamin, what did he do for Israel? What special relationship? First of all, there has never been a special relationship with Israel under any president. The only relationship that Israel has had with the United States is being pressured to commit national suicide. The United States was against the creation of a Jewish state. The United States pressured Israel up until the last minute not to declare independence in 1948. The United States, under Harry Truman, had a complete arms boycott against Israel and wouldn't sell Israel any weapons, anything, give anything to Israel. Complete boycott in the 1948 war when Israel was fighting for her survival. The United States pressured Israel under Eisenhower after the 1956 Suez War to surrender the entire Sinai, to once again surrender the entire Sinai, which Israel had liberated in 1956. The United States, before the 1967 war, pressured Israel not to defend herself, even though all Arab armies were on Israel's border and were openly saying they're going to push the Jews into the sea. Israel was told then by Lyndon Johnson not to defend herself. And the minute Israel did win the 67 war, Johnson and then Richard Nixon and Henry Kissinger and Gerald Ford all pressured Israel to commit suicide. Even Ronald Reagan, who was the lesser of the evils. Ronald Reagan was the best of all of the presidents for Israel. And even he came up with the George Shultz plan to get Israel to go back to the pre-67 borders in the beginning of his presidency. And then in the end, in 1988, tried to pressure Israel to deal with the PLO terrorists. So I could keep going on and on and on with Bill Clinton and Oslo and George W. Bush and Annapolis, where Bush tried to get Israel to commit suicide, and go on and on and on. There is no the only relationship is that America judges Israel with a double standard and tries to get Israel to do things no other country is asked to do. Israel is constantly being pressured to cut her own throat. That's the special relationship. And Kennedy didn't do anything positive for Israel. There was nothing he could do, negative or positive, because Israel was already in the pre-67 borders, but he didn't do anything positive for Israel. And he would be a Tea Party person? The Kennedy that was pushing the civil rights laws? Who was pushing this domestic agenda of what he called his anti-poverty laws and all these other measures which eventually became, which he called the New Frontier and eventually became the Great Society under Lyndon Johnson. That's a Tea Party person? Are you kidding me? He wanted to open up America's borders. That's a Tea Party person? His brother Ted finally succeeded in 1965 with the Immigration Act. Thank you, Benjamin. I hope that answers that question. And now we go to the great Da Vinci, who writes, and I quote, "Why wasn't German Nazi scientist Werner von Braun put on trial at the Nuremberg trials? There was much evidence against him," unquote. Absolutely right. Absolutely right. Von Braun, I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right, I think it's von Braun. He was a Nazi war criminal. He built Nazi Germany's rocket program during World War II, which enabled Germany to do a lot of the things that they did in the war, and which of course extended the war. If Germany had not had the rocket program, they would have lost the war much more quickly, and many people's lives would have been saved. He also used Nazi concentration camp slave labor on his projects. He used the slave labor of Nazi concentration camp victims. And he voluntarily joined the Nazi Party in the 1930s, and then joined the notorious Nazi SS. The same Roosevelt administration, and then the Truman administration afterwards, that did everything to prevent the saving of the Jews during the Holocaust, because the U.S. and British policy was actually to prevent the Jews from escaping Nazi Europe. They did everything they could to make sure the Jews would be murdered. They didn't bomb the rail lines. They closed all the exits. They made sure the Jews were sent back when Jewish refugees tried to get out. The same government that did all those terrible things to the Jews did help the Nazi war criminals. They helped the Nazi war criminals, and he was one of the notorious Nazi war criminals who was helped under the Truman, Eisenhower, Kennedy administrations. Von Braun was put in charge of America's rocket program. In fact, President Kennedy met a number of times, because Benjamin has this thing with, I don't know, he's got this bug about President Kennedy lately. Kennedy met with von Braun, the Nazi war criminal, and pushed him and promoted him and was meeting with him. Kennedy, while he was president. You're absolutely right, von Braun should have been put on trial in Nuremberg and he should have been hanged. Absolutely, and the evidence against him was overwhelming. Thank you, Da Vinci. And now we go to our good friend Chicago Jew, who writes, and I quote, "Do you really believe that all of the world's Jews can fit geographically within the boundaries of Israel?" Unquote. Oh, of course. Of course. They used to say, you know, when there were only a few hundred thousand Jews in Israel, they always used to say, how are you going to fit millions of Jews in Israel? Israel can't support millions of Jews. Look, it's a desert. It's not, you know, it can't. Only Jews with faith knew that, of course, you can do that. There are now 6 million Jews in Israel. In 1948, there were 600,000. That means there are 10 times as many Jews as there were in 1948. Baruch Hashem, thank God. And how many Jews do you have in the world? I mean, realistically, if you want to count the assimilated, the intermarried, the ones that are not really Jewish, the ones that are, you know, Jewish in name only, at the most, I would say you've got about 13 million Jews in the world, at the most. Almost half of the world's Jews already live in Israel. Israel can easily absorb a bigger Jewish population. It would be the best possible thing for the Jewish state. You'd have to move a lot of those Jews into Judea and Samaria because there's not enough room in pre-67 Israel. If millions of Jews went to Israel, there's no Palestine state, that's for sure. Because a lot of them would have to go to Judea and Samaria. There's just not enough room in pre-67 Israel. It would be the best possible thing for Israel. But don't worry, all of the world's Jews are not going to go to Israel, Chicago Jew. Unfortunately, the ones that don't go to Israel are doing something terrible, which they're going to answer for on the Day of Judgment. It's a big mistake they're making, because we're supposed to be living in Israel. But you can be sure that the self-hating Jews, the intermarried Jews, the assimilated Jews, they have no intention of going to Israel. So you don't have to worry about all of the world's Jews going there. Thank you, Chicago Jew, but do all the world's Jews belong there? Every Jew belongs in Israel. Thank you, Chicago Jew. And now we go to Our good friend, I'm allergic to Islam, Schwarzes, and fags, somebody help me, unquote. I'm sorry, that's the name. And now the quote. Give a Yamach Shmor Yosef Chagall, Azeri Israeli politician who denies Armenian genocide, says Armenians provoked Turkey, blames Armenians for murdering Azeris, unquote. Well, I don't know enough about Yosef Chagall, except that I remember that he was with Yisrael Beiteinu, which is Avigdor Lieberman's party, which is a terrible political party in Israel. Complete phony party in Israel. Other than that, he was a member of the Knesset from that party. I remember when he was in the Knesset. But he, you know, eventually Lieberman dropped him and dumped him, so he's no longer in the Knesset. Aside from that, I don't know anything about him. If he's denying the Armenian genocide, then he's lying. There's no question there was an Armenian genocide. 2 million Armenians were brutally murdered by the Turkish Muslim Nazis. That's a fact of history. And anyone who denies it is lying. Thank you, I'm allergic. And now we go to the great Dr. Dan, the voice of reason, common sense, and logic, who writes, and I quote, "You're a great storyteller. Tell us a funny story," unquote. A funny story. Well, I don't know if people remember this story, but I told it years ago on the television show. One time, I went to Manhattan Cable when we had a Manhattan Cable television show. And they knew about my history and my background and everything else, because I used to speak about it on the program. And they thought I was completely nuts. I mean, and they're all black. All the employees there were black. Almost all the employees there were black. There were maybe a couple of Hispanics, but 90% of the employees there were black, at least. Anyway, I used to go there and I used to leave off my tapes and pick up my tapes at Manhattan Cable. And we had a show we were on twice a week. So one time I go there, and I happened to have a plastic bag with flyers or leaflets. We were giving out flyers and leaflets at that time. So I had a plastic bag with flyers and leaflets. And I had all the tapes. I had all my tapes with me, and I had other things I was carrying. And I forgot the plastic bag with the leaflets. I had about 200 or 300 leaflets in a plastic bag. I forgot it there. And I left, and I walked out, and I walked a couple of blocks away. You know, I was on my way to a meeting, and I walked a couple of blocks away, and then I realized, where's my plastic bag? Oh, I forgot, and I realized I forgot the leaflets. I said to myself, I probably forgot it in the Manhattan Cable place. So I go back up there, and I didn't know what they had done with the plastic bag. I didn't know what happened. And all of a sudden, I see they cordoned off the area. They actually cordoned off the area. And I heard someone saying, as I was coming in, they didn't see me, I was in back of them, I heard them saying, "He left it here. You know what he, you know him, he left it here." They thought I left a bomb there. They thought I was completely, you know, they thought, oh, when you tell black people bombs and terrorism and all this other stuff, oh, they go this. You know, because they don't know how to do things like that. Black people are intimidated by things that they don't know how to do. And so, they actually called the police, and they were going to call the bomb squad, and they cordoned off the area. They had two security guards came up and cordoned off the area and told people not to go near that plastic bag with the leaflets, because they didn't know for sure what was in it, because he left it here. He meaning me, the crazy Jewish bomber. He left it here. And, you know, so people were like crowded. I mean, people were crowded around it and, you know, like 10 or 15 feet away from it, wondering what's going to happen. And they were considering evacuating everybody. And I came up and I said, "What's going on here?" And I went over and I went through and I said, "But that's my bag. That's my plastic bag. And I went over and I picked it up and walked out, and that was the end of that. And I guess they were a little relieved, but this is the image that we had with these people at Manhattan Cable TV and at Queens Cable TV. This is the image we had. Brooklyn Cable. This is the image we had with these people. And I have news for you. It's actually a healthy thing to have that type of image. Because, you know, I always had a saying when I was running the JDL in the 80s. I always said, crazy Jews live longer. And when I said crazy, of course, I don't mean literally crazy. Because the so-called crazy Jews are actually the sanest Jews in the world. They live longer because people don't want to start with them. One of my close encounters with the Third World when I was at Manhattan Neighborhood Network, which we used to call Manhattan Negro Network. And now Dr. Dan writes, and I quote, "Also tell us one of your darkest, saddest, angriest, happiest moments in life," unquote. Oh, well, that's easy to do because, I mean, there's no question all of them involve Rabbi Kahana. The darkest and saddest moments were when I found out Rabbi Kahana had been murdered. When I heard that Rabbi, it was the lead story on television, radio, and you could hear, you know, we had a radio, there was a radio on in the prison. And when I heard Rabbi Kahana had been murdered, it was both the darkest and the saddest moment in my life. The angriest moment in my life was when I heard that Rabbi Kahana had been banned. In 1988, when I heard that the Knesset had banned him and the Supreme Court had upheld the banning of Rabbi Kahana, that was the angriest moment because the hypocrisy of these filthy, low-life, self-hating vermin letting all the Arab Muslim Nazis who call for the extermination of the Jewish people and the destruction of Israel, letting them sit in the Knesset and run, and then banning Rabbi Kahana as a so-called racist. I mean, the hypocrisy of these filthy, disgusting beasts. That was the angriest moment in my life. And may Hashem, by the way, may Hashem curse every single person that was involved in the banning of Rabbi Kahana. Every one of them should be cursed in this world and in the next. Yimach shmam v'zichram, shem reshaim v'yirkav. What they caused, the terrible, horrible things that they caused for the Jewish people by banning this great man who could have saved the Jewish people and Israel, could have brought us final redemption. If he hadn't been banned, he would have eventually gone on and become prime minister. And that, I believe, could have brought the Mashiach, the Messiah, and final redemption. So that was the angriest moment. And the happiest moment in my life was 4 years before the banning of Rabbi Kahana, when Rabbi Kahana was elected to the Knesset. That was the happiest moment in my life. Because I knew that Rabbi Kahana would accomplish a lot in the Knesset, and he did. He accomplished a great deal. He pushed the government to allow tens of thousands of Jews to move to Judea and Samaria. The things that he did in the Knesset, he saved the state of Israel from Shimon Peres. Shimon Peres was prime minister. They had the revolving agreement. I don't want to go into the history, but Peres was planning already to do Oslo in the 80s. Rabbi Kahana and his presence in the Knesset made that impractical. It was the happiest moment of my life when he was elected. And I only wish, of course, that he had been allowed to continue to go on and move up the ladder and become prime minister, because that would have been the happiest moment in the lives of every righteous person in this world. Thank you, Dr. Dan. And now we go to someone who is active on the forum, someone who was an old friend of ours in the past, Danielle, who writes, and I quote, "What is your opinion of Rabbi David Ingber of Romemu?" Unquote. Well, first of all, he's not a rabbi, because he's a certified astrologist. He's an astrologer. And he believes in all of this idolatrous hocus-pocus that is absolutely forbidden in Judaism. So he's not a rabbi. He's a New Age people. He's part of these New Age weird people, many of whom are high on drugs, who want to do yoga and astrology and all these other crazy things. And he calls it Judaism. I think that's the most serious sin you could possibly commit, for him to try to mix that in with the holiness of Judaism. The things he preaches are avodah zarah, idolatry. You're not allowed to believe in the things that he preaches. Thank you, Daniel. And now we go to the great Kalman ben Menachem, who writes, and I quote, Reb Chaim, has anyone ever attempted to get Rabbi Kahana's file from the KGB archives? Thank you, unquote. I don't know. That I don't know the answer to. They had a huge dossier on Rabbi Kahana. They had to have had a huge dossier on Rabbi Kahana on the JDL. I'm sure they had a huge dossier on me. I mean, when I was bombing their diplomatic offices and bombing and blowing up their cars, I was hurting Soviet-American relations, which was the main component, the main objective of their foreign policy. So, you know, there's no doubt there was a huge... They have a huge file on Rabbi Kahana and a huge file on the JDL in general. The problem with the KGB archives is whether or not it's the real KGB archives. Because the KGB, what they can do is very simple. Vladimir Putin can put in whatever he wants to put in. And claim that this is what the KGB was writing then. How do we know that it's what the KGB was writing originally years ago? How do we, you know, that these are, a lot of these are lies when you see these things leaked. We don't really know. With them, you never know. Thank you, Kalman. And now we go to the great LKZ, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, what rabbi would you recommend with lectures online to learn Torah or to make Baalei Tshuva? Unquote. That's a good question. I don't know, LKZ. I don't know the answer to that. I don't know enough. You're not going to get a Kahanist rabbi, I don't think. I don't think in English, I don't think you're going to get a Kahanist rabbi. So, here's the dilemma. The dilemma is that you're going to be hearing things which are politically correct. You're going to get someone who is not going to tell you the whole truth. And as a Kahanist, if you believe in the fact that we have to encourage the Arabs to leave the land of Israel, that we have to believe in the entire land of Israel, that all Jews should live in Israel, and all the other things that we as Kahanists believe in, if you believe in that, and even our views on America and issues out and the issues involving America and foreign aid and what America should do and what the righteous Gentiles should do and so on and so forth. If you believe in the Kahanist philosophy, you're not going to get that from the rabbis that are on the internet. You don't have that today. You just don't have that today. So, what do you do? I mean, you want to learn Torah. You want to become better informed. The challenge is, you should go and you should find a rabbi who is giving you lectures, and you have videos that you can watch and you can study and you can get these lectures. You should be doing that. But you got to learn to discern between what he's teaching you, let's say on Shabbat and on Kashrut. When Shabbat is the Sabbath and Kashrut is keeping kosher and all the other laws. The things he's teaching you, you should learn and absorb the sources and so on and so forth. And learn not to accept the politically correct stuff that you're also going to learn, unfortunately, in addition to that. When you hear him do politically correct stuff, you got to, if you want to remain committed to the Kahanist philosophy, you got to be able to discern. You got to be able to learn the basic Torah principles that they're teaching you. You have no, you know, if you want to learn, you've got to. But you also have to be able to discern and to distinguish when they become politically correct. And you have to have enough faith to believe that the politically correct stuff is not authentic Judaism when you hear politically correct stuff from the Torah, from someone who claims to be teaching Torah. It's not authentic Judaism. It's not. So I know what I said now is complicated. But basically, you should learn as much as you can learn and reject when you see politically correct stuff introduced into the lesson. That part you reject, that portion reject. So most of it you'll be able to learn and absorb. Find a good rabbi who speaks English and who can give these lessons and who is interesting. And not just one, you could find the number of rabbis. And of course, you should find a rabbi who's pro-Israel, who supports Israel and supports the Jewish state and the Jewish people in the land of Israel. And you should start learning. You should start learning online and share what you're learning with us, you know, and I'm speaking not just to you, LKZ, I'm speaking to people in general. People should share that in threads, with threads on the forum so that we can, you know, so that we can all see and evaluate what's going on and, you know, share the experience with all of us when you do go and watch these videos and try to learn. There are books also. I mean, some of them are books and some of it is online videos. Very, very worthwhile to try to learn. Even though, again, you're going to get politically correct stuff. But that doesn't mean that just because you get some politically correct stuff, that doesn't mean that you can't learn the other stuff, that you can't learn valuable, true information about what it says in the Torah and the Mishnah and the Talmud and the Bible. There is valuable stuff that you can learn. Okay, and LKZ now writes, and I quote, "Who are our Israel best friends in the world?" Unquote. In other words, who are the best friends in the world for Israel? LKZ, if you're referring to nations, I'm going to quote our great rabbi, Rabbi Meir Kahana, Zatzal. Nations do not have friends. Nations only have interests. So we don't have any friends, and no nation really has any real friends in the world. It's only interests. Unfortunately, the nations of the world will not support Israel, because God created a situation deliberately where the Arabs had the oil, and there are 1.5 billion Muslims in the world, and there are 66 Muslim countries against one tiny Jewish state. So you know that people are going to side with 66 Muslim countries against one tiny Jewish state, and they're going to side with the countries that have the oil and that have the petrodollars. That's who they're going to go with. So the nations of the world are not going to be on Israel's side. That's just not going to happen until the coming of the Messiah. When the Messiah comes, you're only going to have the righteous Gentiles are going to be the only ones who are going to survive. So, of course, they will all be there. Then we're truly going to have friends. Then we will have friends in the world when that happens. But right now we don't, in terms of nations. Now, in terms of individuals, not governments and nations and sovereign states, but in terms of individuals, there are people who are genuine friends of Israel. The best friends we have are usually the evangelical Christians who believe in the Bible. We have differences with evangelical Christians on theology. You know, they're Christians, we're Jews, but they do genuinely support Israel and they do really want us to win. And they really want the Jews to liberate the land of Israel. They want the rebuilding of the temple. They want all the things that they want for Israel. They want a program that in 95%, at least 95% of the cases, is the same as what we want in terms of in terms of liberating the land, rebuilding the temple. On those issues, they're with us. So the evangelical Christians, in terms of individuals, they are our best friends, and in many cases, our only friends in the world. Thank you, LKZ. And now we go to our good friend, Mein Koran, who writes, and I quote, "How sick is it that YouTube and Twitter allow Al-Qaeda to have official accounts where they behead people, but shut down other channels for showing breasts," unquote. Well, Mein Koran, I agree with you that it's very sick to allow Al-Qaeda to have official accounts. And there's no question that YouTube and Twitter allow Muslim terrorist mass murderers to have free reign, practically. And there are thousands and thousands of accounts and videos all over YouTube and Twitter that Muslim terrorists are running, or Muslim terrorist front groups are running. You have the same thing on Facebook, by the way. But I do disagree with the second part of what you're writing when you say showing breasts. I don't think that websites should show a woman's breasts, because I think that it encourages the raw behavior of a man, where a man doesn't have the type of self-control and discipline that would lead to him finding the right girl and getting married and having a good family. We want to encourage people, men and women, to get married and have children and families and love their children and love their families. And we want men to love their wives, not to lust after other women's breasts. We want men to love their wives and love their children and love their families and be happy and satisfied with their wives. And so I think things that are either that are either pornographic or even a form of soft pornography, like frontal nudity or even topless women, I don't think that that's a healthy thing for society. And once upon a time, you know, 30, 40, 50 years ago, you never had that being publicly shown. And I think it was a better world when you didn't have that being publicly shown. Thank you, Mein Koran. And we go now to the great Dan Ben Noach, our great forum administrator, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, do you think it would be a good idea to put a section on the site for people to book you to speak at events, unquote. I think it would be great if people do book me to speak at events. If people can get me speaking engagements, absolutely would be great. It would be wonderful. Of course we want that. We encourage people to do that. Absolutely. I used to mention that along with all the other things to ask people for their help when we had TV shows. I actually did, there was a time when I used to mention that, but, you know, that's something which a lot of people don't do that, so I sort of dropped it. The only thing is, Dan, to actually open up another section, I don't think it would be a very active section. I think you'd have a few posts in the beginning, and then it would pretty much die down. And I think we have so many sections as we already on the site. But if someone could get me speaking dates, whenever someone can get me speaking dates, I do think they should open up a thread in the general discussion section pointing out that I have a speaking date. And I think that those are good things. Absolutely. Those are things that should be encouraged. I think to open up a separate section now, I'm reluctant to open up separate sections because I think we have too many already as it is. But no, I agree with you. I'm very glad you bring this up. If people can get me speaking dates at events, absolutely. That would be fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. Thank you, Dan Ben Noach. And now we go to the great EB22, who writes, and I quote, are you in agreement with Pastor Manning that George Zimmerman is being set up and framed for allegations and charges against him since the time Zimmerman was acquitted for second-degree murder, unquote? I don't know. I would be very careful if I were George Zimmerman. I think that they do want to smear him, and I think that they do want to bring him down because they want to make a hero out of that vile criminal Trayvon Martin. So I would be very careful if I was Zimmerman. Whether or not this is a deliberate setup and they're deliberately trying to set him up, I don't know. I don't think it's impossible. I think that, you could have a situation where every time he gets into an argument or a disagreement, if someone calls the police, automatically they arrest him and automatically they charge him. That's a possibility. It could also be that the police were so intimidated by charges of racism that they feel they have to do this every time they come in contact with him. I don't know. I don't know the answer. But if I were George Zimmerman, I'd be very, very careful and cautious. Because there are people out there who do want to smear him as much as possible. Thank you, EB. And now we go to the great Ruby Stars, who writes, and I quote, why do you think liberals emphasize population control so much? Do they think human beings are evil and need to be destroyed, unquote? Well, I think Ruby Stars, I think we know that if there are human beings who are evil, they're the most evil of all, the liberals. I think that they do believe that most of the human race, they want to eliminate most of the human race. They want to be the only ones on the planet Earth. The Rockefellers and all these billionaire leftists always were in favor of euthanasia, abortion, population control. They always were very enthusiastic about this. And, you know, this is something that you'll always find billionaires and very wealthy people, because they think they're superior. They think they're above the rest of the human race. Bill Gates, by the way, and his evil wife are deeply involved in these efforts at population control and every other attempt to wipe out the human race or wipe out most of the human race, because they think they're the only ones that should be on the planet Earth. They think they're the only ones worthy of life. And it's part of their evil behavior. Thank you so much, Ruby Stars. Okay. And let's see here. And now we go to the great Maimonides, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, can you give any advice for people to stay safe when traveling the streets in a de Blasio Sharpton in New York City, unquote. Well, actually right now, New York is, believe it or not, is the safest city in the country, in the United States. And that's still the spillover effect of Rudy Giuliani. He got a little tough with criminals, and look at the effect. Look at how much safer. Crime went down 73% since the time Giuliani was in office. 73% because of Giuliani's policies. And Mike Bloomberg, generally speaking, when it comes to policing policies, continued what Giuliani started when he was mayor of New York. De Blasio, if de Blasio rolls back those policies and eliminates those policies now, then the city will become very unsafe. And I don't know what to say at that point. The city will just be very unsafe. And you're not allowed to carry weapons. You're not allowed to defend yourself. They disarm all the law-abiding citizens in New York City. That's one of the terrible things Giuliani did, and all the other mayors. They disarmed all the law-abiding citizens. This is what happens when you don't have a Second Amendment. People are unable to defend themselves. We'll see what de Blasio does. We'll see who he makes police commissioner. We'll see what his new policies are. If he sends out the signal that the criminals and the beasts can control the streets again, then we're gonna be in very serious trouble. And I think a lot of people are gonna wind up leaving New York if that happens. Thank you, Maimonides. And now we go to our great friend Tzelhar, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, do you like the old Ladino music? What is your favorite Ladino song, if you have one, unquote. I do like the old... I don't remember the names of Ladino songs. I honestly don't remember Tzelhar. But I do like the old Ladino music, yes. I do. I like the way it sounds. I haven't heard Ladino music in maybe 30 or 35 years. Is the last 30, 35 years ago is the last time that I heard Ladino music. So I honestly don't remember the names of any of the Ladino songs. My family did speak Ladino. Ladino, by the way, is the Sephardic version of Yiddish. It's ancient. It's old Spanish, the old Spanish of the Jews that fled the Inquisition. And my family originally did live in Spain before the Inquisition and had to flee to Egypt and Morocco. They had to go to other countries, and they did speak Ladino in my family. So, yes, I did enjoy the old Ladino music, but I don't remember the names of any of the songs, Tzelhar. Thank you for the question. And I very much enjoyed doing the show, as always. Until next week, Shalom.